came to America when he was 6 months old. He started as a stock boy at the grocery store. Eventually, he owned it. He turned it into the biggest grocery store chain in New York City. He now owns a real estate company worth over $2 billion. He ran for mayor of New York City. He almost won. You can't make this story up. This is the Katz Roundtable with John Catsimatidis.
Everywhere around the world, they come to America.
Good morning, New York. This is the Katz Roundtable. John Catsimatidis here Sunday morning. We have one great show for you today. Tomorrow, March 25th, is Greek Independence Day. We have former Crown Prince of Greece, Pavlou, and we have the Ambassador of the United States to Greece, George Tsounis, to wish everybody a happy Independence Day. What's going on in New York and New York City, New York State? Hank Shankoff, one of the smartest guys I know, a great Democratic strategist. There's a lawsuit. The left-rack organization is suing the court system for delaying the due process of tenants. We have a great lawyer here today, and he'll be telling us what the heck is going on. Eric Schuffler, what's going on in New Jersey? Steve Cates, what's going on in the skies? Governor David Paterson. And let's start with Mike Stoller talking about the New York real estate industry.
Good morning. This is Michael Stoller for the Stoller Real Estate Report on the Katz Roundtable. Retail, what's really happening in retail? I don't know the answer, so today I've assembled the leading maven of the retail world, one of the three founding members of the Edward S. Gordon Retail Group, the one and only Andrew Goldberg. Thanks for being here, Andrew.
Thanks for having me, Michael. What a nice introduction.
So when you went over there, you were the first vice chairman of CBRE.
Yeah, I was there for 30 years, so I was an overnight success.
It took 30 years for them?
Okay. Vice chairman came about 20, but yeah.
So how's the world look today, you know, especially after COVID? We're at a different time today in the retail world?
We're at a very different time in retail. You know, when COVID-19, it was slowing down already, right? The markets peaked in around 15, 16, and things were starting to slow. But then when COVID hit, everything, you know, came to a halt. So most retailers spent, you know, a couple of years almost trying to figure out the situation and figure out their stores. That had no growth. That had no, you know, changes. Most people just kicked the can. And now what we've seen last year in 22 and in 23 was that businesses needed to start to move forward again. And that's when we started to see some real aggressive growth and new entrants come into the market, people changing concepts. Because retail, you always need to keep moving forward. And we had a couple of years of just stop.
Now, you had said a couple of weeks ago, I think, to a member of the press, that the world of the retail ownership of properties has continued from many years ago when it originally started.
So going back when I started in the business and even before then, a lot of the European designers they were family-owned businesses, multi-generational, and they owned a lot of their real estate. So it wasn't uncommon, you know, in Europe, in all the major cities, you find that they own their real estate. And then some of them were coming here and they were buying the buildings here. As companies grew, it became less desirable for them to own the real estate. And as they went public, a lot of those companies, owning the real estate wasn't the best use of the cash. And it seems like we're now going back full circle to, you know, some of these companies buying the real estate.
Would you consider certainly the prices that they're paying ridiculous, because they seem rather high as compared to the rest of the market of the real estate world?
I wouldn't say ridiculous. I'd say that it's a very finite market that we're talking about that we've seen the trades in, right? We haven't seen a lot of trades throughout the city. We've seen so far the two big ones that everyone's talking about are sitting in, you know, 56th and 5th. And when you realize that for these brands, and they're big luxury groups and they're public, but they're really controlled by family shareholders, that it's not the worst use of cash to own the asset, but more importantly, it allows them to tie up the space for their brands
and
in perpetuity.
And it also protects them on rent increases.
And they can figure out how they want to allocate the expenses to the store on rent versus how they want to allocate it throughout the corporate structure.
What's happening on Madison Avenue today? Because Madison Avenue had really been hurting.
So Madison has gone through a huge evolution. It was COVID really hurt Madison and Fifth, for that matter. But when you walked Madison a year ago, it was a lot of vacancy. And now we're seeing that there are leases that are, you know, stores coming, stores under construction. A lot of shifting was Madison, you know, 57th to 62nd, 63rd. You saw a lot of activity. And now going north up to 72nd, there's many of those spaces all have coming soon signs. So we've seen a tremendous amount of space come off the market. And we're going to watch as in the prime part of Madison, two buildings are going to be coming down. So you're going to have a full block empty on 58th to 59th. And then you have up on 60th, another development. So those tenants all need to come out. They're all relocating elsewhere on the avenue. And then over the next several years, you'll start to see those spaces come back on the market again.
The restaurant business seems to be growing, especially your firm recently took care of the Avra lease at the Farley building.
Yeah, F&B has been a real driver, right? Luxury and F&B have really been driving a lot of the deals that are done and the velocity that we've seen over the last year. Everything from the quick serve grab and go stuff to the full service restaurants. I think that as the coming back to work and figuring out how to make office buildings the most desirable as they can be with amenities in the building as well as restaurants at the base. So the better restaurateurs are making deals now. They're able to grow and landlords want them in the buildings.
You were in the bagel business, okay? There is, you know, Goldberg's Bagels, everybody knows it in the Hamptons and parts of New Jersey and other areas. There are stores like bagel stores, you know, Raising Cane and all these others. And also, what's your thoughts about those coming in here, coupled with the fact of what's happening in Times Square?
A couple of different things there, right? When you look at Times Square, again, over 60 million people coming in to visit Times Square. They're there. It's just a sea of people. And what we've seen now is that a lot of fast food or quick serve is going in there. And it's the Raising Cane's, which has a line at all times. We've seen, you know, McDonald's open up their new cons, Popeyes, and it's just a lot of grab and go. That's what it is. That's where the people are, and that's what you're catering to. And they're seeming to have huge success, and the rents came down to levels where you can do that.
And you can make a living.
And they can make good money.
So as I would say on my TV show, I always had a crystal apple. I don't have it over here. The crystal apple, I think, is shiny. Because I think the world of retail is very successful, and I think it's going to only get better. And I'd like to thank Andrew Goldberg of CBRE for being here today. See you next week.
Thanks for having me, Michael. Always nice to see you.
Thank you for listening to the Cats Roundtable. We'll be right back right after this break. Welcome back to the Cats Roundtable. With us this Sunday morning is His Royal Highness, the Crown Prince of Greece, Pavlou, and it's Greek Independence Day on Monday. And he called to wish all the Greek Americans in America a happy Greek Independence Day. And in addition, on giving us an update, what's going on? Your Royal Highness, give us an update.
Hey, good morning, and congratulations to all of us. God bless Greece, and we love America, who always takes care of us. And I've lived many years there, so both countries very much. I'm moving a lot between Greece and New York. Athens is almost my main base now, so I see a lot of activity there. Everybody loves the relationship that we have with America, and as you see every year, we always send the Evzons out to walk down Fifth Avenue. A very proud day for us, and I think for all Greeks and non-Greeks to see that. Obviously, the Greek community that you also support very strongly is one of the best, and takes care of America as best as they can. and we love to keep that relationship strong.
I had a very good time in London. We celebrated the 1 year memorial of your dad passing, because he was, I thought he was a very great person, and His Royal Highness King Charles hosted us at Windsor Castle and St. John's Cathedral there, and we went to the Greek Cathedral, St. Sophia, in London, and those were truly great experiences. And thank you for including us in the celebrations.
Of course, my father, really liked the relationship with his friends in America, and I know we had tried to do something a year before, but there were certain COVID problems going on at the time, and it was difficult to get the right crowd around. But His Majesty was so nice to have us in St. George's Chapel in Windsor, which was beautiful, and having you guys around made it even more special. And then doing our own memorial down in St. Sophia in London was lovely as well. That combination was perfect. And it just shows the strength of our relationship with the British royal family and ourselves keeps going strong. And I'm glad that you guys got a chance to see some of that. It's a whole different pomp and ceremony that's over there. But it was true, and very much the family was united there, and close friends. It was a very select crowd, and so I'm glad you guys were there.
Your Royal Highness, Crown Prince Pavlou of Greece, thank you so much for coming on and wishing everybody a Greek Independence Day. And the birthplace of democracy, Greece, and thank you for calling in, and we'll catch up again real soon.
Thank you very much.
The Cats Roundtable.
With us today is Ambassador George Tsounis. He is the American ambassador to Greece. And Monday, is March 25th, is Greek Independence Day. George Tsounis, Ambassador, you're of Greek background. You're now the ambassador to Greece from the United States. Your forefathers were from Greece. Tell me what the feeling is in Greece. Is Greece making progress in the European community? Give us an update of what you have.
John, it certainly is. Greece went through a pretty severe economic crisis a decade ago. It's now emerged as the fastest growing economy in Europe over the last 3 years. Its sovereign debt is investment grade. In fact, the Greek 10-year is about 100 basis points lower than the U.S. 10-year. It has a primary budget surplus, and foreign direct investment is at a record level. So the economy is doing well. As a matter of fact, it's growing at 4 or 5 times the rate of the eurozone. So they have recovered. An unemployment rate that was at 28% is now in single digits. And, there's definitely optimism here. But the United States is the most popular country in Greece. Record popularity, and the relationship between our two countries are as good as it's ever been.
I have heard that. And I understand from some friends of mine that the economy is great, and the European community, citizens of other countries are flocking to Greece because Greece is offering a special deal that if you become a resident of Greece, do you know anything about that?
Yeah, there's two incentives. One is Golden Visa. If you purchase a home here. And the second issue is if you relocate to Greece. There's a lot of specifics involved, but, just the broad strokes, you can limit your taxes to $100,000 over a period of 5 years. So very significant tax benefits and incentives if you want to come here. And people are taking advantage of it. And it's not just Europeans. It's Israelis, Chinese, and citizens of Turkey have taken advantage of the Golden Visa. But, you know, John, Greece is also like the Florida of Europe as well. You know, I'm sitting here in November, December, January, February, you know, with 70 degree weather and perpetual sunshine. So not only is it a beautiful place to do business, it's a great place to live.
Understood. What else would you like to tell the American people about the beautiful country of Greece?
Well, our countries are so intertwined. When our country stood up a government 248 years ago, it did so based on the values and the principles that were born right here in ancient Greece. That for the first time, people came together with a sense of self-determination, the genesis of democracy. For the first time, people determined by whom and how they would be governed. So when the U.S. stood up a government, they borrowed from the ancient Greeks. Those principles, those values still exist today. So, you know, our countries are interlocked as the primary democracy in the world and the first democracy of the world. You know, we have an obligation to the concept of the freedoms and the values and the principles that democracy stands for the rule of law and for opportunity for everyone.
Well, Ambassador George Tsounis, thank you for your update on Greece. I was born in Greece too, and when I go there, I have tears in my eyes of thinking of my grandfathers and great grandfathers. And well, God bless America, but I pray for Greece too. Thank you so much for doing such a great job in Greece, and looking forward to seeing you in the near future. I may see you in May.
John, I can't wait. My love to your family, and I hope to see you soon, both in the U.S. and in Greece, my friend. Always a pleasure.
Thank you, Ambassador. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John. Thank you.
The Cats Roundtable.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Hi, it's Lou Dobbs for Priority Gold, America's precious metals dealer. These are volatile times with high inflation, soaring debt, wars on multiple continents, and rising financial stress. Central banks are buying gold to diversify their reserves, so are many Americans. Call Priority Gold and find out how precious metals can help you diversify your portfolio. They're highly rated and happy to help. Call 1-866-303-6357 or get a free gold guide at PriorityGoldGuide.com. That's PriorityGoldGuide.com.
Ohio, ready for some quick mental health facts? Let's go. Nearly 2 million Ohioans live with a mental health condition. In the U.S., more than 50% of people will be diagnosed with a mental illness in their lifetime. Depression is a leading cause of disability worldwide. So why are some of us still stigmatizing people living with a mental health condition when we know all of this? Let's listen to the facts and beat the stigma. Ohio, challenge what you know about mental health at beatthestigma.org.
There's a lot of problems in New York City in the real estate industry. Landlords are complaining they can't collect their money. The court system is not working. Some are falling behind on their loans because they're not collecting their money. Well, with us today is Nativ Winarski, our friend's the Lefrak family attorney. Right now, there's a lawsuit. And Nativ, give us an update of what's going on.
Yes. So this case was commenced because Housing Court has, for a long time now, ceased to function as intended. And it has, unfortunately, to all who walk through its doors, only gotten worse and worse over the years. A typical non-payment case was initially intended to start and finish. It might be hard to believe at this point, but it was initially intended to start and finish within 30-day period, which is generally the time in which property is rented. Now, over time, that time period has increased to 3 months, then 6 months, and 9 months. And now that time period has typically increased to well over a year, oftentimes a year and a half. Now, I do want to emphasize that this is not because housing court judges and clerks are lazy or not looking to do their job. To the contrary, housing court judges are some of the hardest and most diligent judges in our system, but it's largely a function of an inadequate budget and insufficient personnel. And that inability to properly operate the system does not excuse, however, the housing court from derogating their statutory duties. So just by way of illustration, when a landlord commences a case and the tenant answers, the statute mandates that a trial be had within 3 to 8 days. Now, John, I need not tell you, you'd be lucky to smell a trial within a year. I mean, we cannot even get on the calendar in some boroughs for 6 months. That's just to appear on the calendar for the first time. And what this leads to is a complete breakdown in the system where our clients tell us it's not even worth to start the case in housing court and look for some different alternative. Now, this ultimately goes to the detriment and injures everyone involved. This is not a landlord action. This is an action really that was commenced on behalf of the citizens of New York. Now, the reason I say that is because landlords aren't into the business of obtaining evictions. As you know, John, landlords are in the business of getting rent for the goods and services they supply, and namely housing. Landlords don't make money by evicting people. They simply just hope to expect the rent. And so when there's an issue as to the payment of that rent, if you have an effective housing court, what you can do is resolve those issues. Landlord knows it can commence a case. It will get its relief. It'll be able to possibly enter into a stipulation with the tenant. And that all could be done within an effective time period, an efficient time period. Whereas if you have a system where things go on for a year and a half, and nothing's moving, then landlords are unable to operate their business. And if they're not collecting rent and they're unable to operate their business, well, that means tenants aren't getting their services because landlords don't have the money to provide those services. And then on the flip side of that, from the tenant's end standpoint, if it takes a year and a half to conduct the case, and now tenants, at the end of the day, if there's a judgment rendered for that year and a half worth of rent, it's very difficult for that tenant to come up with a year and a half worth of rent. Whereas if it would have been completed in 30, 60, 90 days, it's far more likely that the tenant can pay the rent and the landlord and tenant can go on their way.
Nativa, we experience the same thing. We find that if the tenant ends up owing a year's worth of rent, there's no way they can pay the year's worth of rent.
Right. And so then what option do you have at that point? The option is to evict them, which is something you never wanted in the first instance. Because you wanted to do was just to be able to collect the rent and resolve the issue with the tenant. But if you're putting everyone in a position where none of their problems can be resolved in housing court, which was its initial intention, then what you have is a broken system. And so we commence this case to say, look, the statute tells the court how this is supposed to be run. And what we're asking for is simply for the court to follow the statute as intended. And if the Office of Court Administration has an issue as to what the statute says, and they say, look, you know, we can't run it because we don't have the proper budget, well, that's something to be taken up with the legislature. But as it's presently written, they have statutory obligations like we all do, which is to follow the law. And with the law, as it was.
I am very disappointed in REBNY, the Real Estate Board of New York, that usually was very good years ago on their ability to get a decent deal for all sides in Albany. And they're putting the business community, of the real estate business community, in trouble because nobody wants to make an investment in New York. And if nobody's making an investment in New York, where's the future?
Well, I share the concern with you that the future of New York is so highly dependent upon the real estate community. And the way the legislatures are treating the real estate community, they're almost looking to drive it away, which is, and I need not tell you, John, how that's going to impact the tax base, how it impacts the quality of life for all the New Yorkers. I don't know if I would necessarily put this particular issue at REBNY's door because it's not REBNY's obligation to follow the statute. It's the obligation of the people running the court system. But I generally agree with you that as a whole, whether it's the recent laws that were enacted, in 2019 that have drove property values down 40, 50, 60%, and everything that goes along with that and how that impacts New York society as a whole, all of these things, including the inefficiencies of the housing court, is going to drive people away from this great city that we love, John.
Well, thank you so much. And let's connect real soon, because if you need support on your lawsuit, I'm sure you'll check with my company lawyers, and I'm sure they want to show you support, because we want New York City to be fair and square to all sides.
Thank you, John. Myself, personally, I want to thank you for everything you've done for the community, both the real estate and New York and the New York citizenry at large. And so thank you for everything that you do.
Thank you so much, and we'll catch up soon. Thank you.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you for listening to the Cats Roundtable. We'll be right back right after this break. Welcome back to the Cats Roundtable. With us today is Governor David Paterson, one common sense guy, one good friend, and he gives us good advice every Sunday morning. Governor, give us our good advice for this Sunday morning. The budget, is the Governor Hochul listening?
Well, I think the governor is trying as hard as she can to bring this budget in on time, but there are really some built-in structural issues that she has with the legislature, particularly about where money is spent and how it's going to be spent. You know, it comes up this time every year, and every year it looks gloomy. Some years things work out more quickly. But I think right now they've got a lot of different issues that they have to grapple with. And, of course, the upstate region is railing that they're being dealt out of a lot of resources. And this is an area she once represented it. So it's putting her in a very precarious position. And I just wish her well. She seems to come up with the idea to work it out, as she has in the past two budgets that she's passed. So let's hope that she can think of the right discussion to have with the legislature to bring it in on time this year.
Yeah, I mean, both you and Governor Cuomo gave her good advice on that she's very powerful and during the budget period of time. And I hope she uses the bullets at her disposal.
Well, you know, speaking of Governor Cuomo, we talked to him on the broadcast last Sunday, and he said something, and it really, as the week went on, I was unnerved by the reaction to it, because I saw it as a sense of reflection and a sense of honesty. And what he said was that when he came in 2011, he was very dedicated to congestion pricing and making it happen in the state. It was a long, tough struggle that he had. But I think he thought he was approaching the finish line when he had to leave or he chose to resign in 2021. And the newspapers were writing that it was as if he didn't know what he was doing. And he said first he's with it and then he's not with it. But that is really the issue and the challenge of public service. Things may not be at a certain point the way they were when you thought of a piece of legislation or a policy that you'd like to invoke. So I was really disturbed at the media outlets who took advantage of that. And, of course, I would be more than disturbed, because I myself was with Mayor Bloomberg when he came up with the congestion pricing idea in a press conference in 2008, which Arnold Schwarzenegger was present on video from California. And my view was the same as the mayor's and eventually Governor Cuomo, who succeeded me. But over the years, and particularly right now, the subways are just not going to generate the revenue that the creators of this idea think that it is. It's just not going to happen.
It's not. Also, and the subway system, are they still getting in? Are we still losing $800,000 a year on getting into their subways?
And as we learned, it isn't just people walking in and get a free ride. It's people who can walk in and then pull a gun on somebody in the middle of a fight. And luckily for the victim, he got the gun away and shot the perpetrator, who had was in the subway system illegally at that particular time. These are issues that are going to have to be drilled down on, but it's going to take a while to work this out, as it always does. And I just think also the issue of how much we're charging different vehicles to come at certain times and that kind of thing is going to be very complicated and very difficult. Jana Lever, the head of the MTA, and the governor have assured me that this is going to work. So, you know, I'll take their word for it for a moment. But I think the one positive thing is they do recognize the obstacles that they're up against.
Anything else you want to talk about?
Well, it was very interesting to hear that earlier this week on the program that you had the former Prime Minister of Canada on the program, and he was talking about the border. And he wasn't talking about the Canadian border. He was talking about our border. And he's one of these individuals that when he left office, he didn't mind commenting on anything that was going on anywhere. And it was really quite interesting what he talked about. You know, after he left office, he was very critical of the NAFTA agreement that was occurring, feeling that Mexico was getting an unfair advantage and also feeling that the United States was not benefiting from this. And he is a world leader, and he may not have been the leader of the United States government, but those are some very valuable insights that I got from him when we met with him last Thursday.
Governor Patterson, let's pray for New York, you know, and let's hope the subways get safer so they can start using it. And I hope we collect our entrance fee to the subway so we don't have to raise any more money, because right now New York City is still hurting.
Well, I ride the subway myself. I have since I was 17. And for the most part, it seems fine, but it is a invaluable asset to New York City, and we've got to keep it safe.
Thank you, Governor Patterson, and we'll catch up with you again real soon.
Take care, John.
With us this morning is my friend Eric Schuffler. He is also my partner in the Ferry Hawks, and we have a lot of adventures on in that company. We both enjoy baseball, but he's also a major player in New Jersey, a lobbyist, and a friend. And he gives us an update. What the heck is going on in New Jersey? It's an election year. Eric, give us an update.
John, what the heck is going on is the right way to think about it, because it is political uncertainty in New Jersey right now. We had a couple major developments that I think are of interest. First, Senator Bob Menendez, who is up for re-election this year and also is indicted and facing several federal charges, has decided he's not running in the Democratic primary. That is the primary where the governor's wife, Tammy Murphy, is running against Congressman Andy Kim. Bob Menendez said he's not going to run in that primary, John, but what do you think he's going to do?
Run as a third party.
Run as a third party. So he's hinting that he will run as an independent, which would create a ton of chaos in what could be a competitive primary in New Jersey.
Well, I mean, the way everybody looks at it, if he runs a third party, unless he gets a deal from the Democrats will lose the New Jersey seat.
It certainly puts a possibility of having, you know, someone with very broad name recognition who has support in the Hispanic community on the ballot, which could siphon off votes and make, you know, what should be a Democratic seat harder.
So is that a get out of jail free card?
One could argue it's a, hey, I'm still here, don't forget about me card.
Well, we'll see what happens. That's going to be an adventure. Now, also, next year is the big governor's race, and Mr. Governor Murphy is term limited. Tell us what the heck is going on there.
Yeah, so Governor Murphy is term limited. He just had a big win bringing FIFA and the finals of the World Cup to New Jersey, which is, you know, not just great for New Jersey, John. It's great for New York City. It's great for Staten Island. It's great for all five of the boroughs. But he is term limited, and we have a kind of a free-for-all right now. Mayor of Jersey City, Steve Fulop, is declared he is running. The former Senate President, Stephen Sweeney, who comes out of South Jersey, is running. We have two Congress people, Mikey Sherrill, you know, from Essex County, Josh Gottheimer from Bergen County, both hinting that they may run. The Speaker from Middlesex County, Craig Coughlin, huge sports fan, longest-serving Speaker in New Jersey history, he may run. Governors don't come up often, very, very often, John. So all major Democrats are circling around it. And, you know, governors do elect, we do elect Republican governors in New Jersey also.
Understood. What else is doing in New Jersey that people should know about?
Well, the big news out of the legislature this week is the Transportation Trust Fund was passed, and that does contain a 2 cent a year gas tax increase, which will fund billions of dollars worth of work over the next, you know, 5 to 10 years. So
you mean New Yorkers can't drive over the bridge and buy cheap Jersey gas anymore?
They can drive over to New Jersey and still have their gas pumped by a gas attendant, because we still do not have you can't pump your own gas in New Jersey, but our taxes have caught up a little bit. We're no longer the cheapest option out there. But, you know, infrastructure and good roads are really important, and they have to be paid for.
Understood. Anything else you want to get off your chest on a Sunday morning?
You know, I think there was something interesting that I think you'd take note of that I read this morning. You know, the Republican primary, Republicans do win governorships in New Jersey. It's down to really two main people at this point, Jack Cittarelli and John Bramnick. And John Bramnick came out, you know, a few days ago and said, if Donald Trump wins New Jersey, he's not going to run in the primary, which I thought was a really interesting from a marketing perspective, how you have two Republican primary candidates.
It differentiates yourself.
Trying to differentiate yourself. One trying Jack Cittarelli, who wasn't a Trump Republican, now appealing to the Trump Republicans. Another one who has been very clearly not a Trump Republican, doubling down on that to differentiate himself in a primary.
Has there been any Democrats that announced they're going to run because of Governor Murphy's term limited?
The only one, there's only two at this point, Jersey City Mayor Steve Fulop and former Senate President Steve Sweeney from South Jersey. The other ones, I think, are, you know, there's a lot of energy focused on this Senate race, which First Lady Tammy Murphy against Congressman Andy Kim. So it's been a long time since there's been this much uncertainty and jockeying in the state.
My friend, Jim McGreevy, is he going to win?
Your friend and my friend, Jim McGreevy, is going to win. There is no one better at retail politics. There is nobody who works harder. I've worked for a lot of people in my day. You know, Jim has his heart in the right place, a man of the people, you know, has a good vision for Jersey City, and he will be Jersey City's next mayor.
Well, that sounds good, because I like him. You know, he works very hard. And
a good man.
Good man. Well, thank you, Eric, and thank you for the update, and we'll catch up again real soon.
Look forward to it.
Thank you for listening to the Cats Roundtable. We'll be right back right after this break. Welcome back to the Cats Roundtable. With us today is Hank Schenkoff, a good friend, a campaign manager, a campaign strategist. Hank has been around New York politics and United States politics for the whole 100 years, at least. Hank, give us an update. What the heck is going on in New York?
Well, John, actually, I've been around about 200 years, they tell me, but that's how it feels sometimes. Look, New York is in a crisis. The city is generally in a crisis. We've gone through better times and worse times, but we're in pretty bad times right now. We have a mayor who's being pounded in every direction, who's being pulled and tugged, and he's doing the best he can, but there are certain things that you can't do better about. We have a crumbling infrastructure. We were left with the mayor de Blasio, who left the city with a completely spent capital budget. We have rising costs. The migrants are an impossible problem to face, and the federal money is going to be gone soon. We have a police department that badly needs new bodies, needs new people, needs to replace retirees quickly because we're losing people, and on and on and on and on. And we have a financial picture that was gloomy when Mayor Adams came into office and has become even more gloomy since.
And we got the budget coming up in the next couple of weeks in Albany. And last week's show, we had Governor Patterson and Governor Cuomo, Governor number 55, Governor number 56, giving some advice to Governor number 57, or Governor Hochul, who we love. But they told her that during the budget period, a governor has extra power. During Governor Patterson's reign, he vetoed over 6,000 items, and until the state legislator surrendered. What do you think? What's going on in Albany? What is your pulse of what's going on?
Well, look, the legislature rolled Governor Hochul the first time around. They held her up on a judicial appointment that held up the budget. They made her look foolish. She appears to be stronger now, and I think the legislature got the point that to function the chaos, Hochul was nearly defeated when she ran for election in 2022. So that being said, they don't want to have a repeat of that. They don't want to weaken the Democrat in Albany. Why? Because they want to do well in congressional elections and in their state legislative elections come the fall of 2024. So this won't be as contentious as it might be, but they'll still want to prove who's boss of the legislature. Well, they want to show that they're the boss and not the governor. So look for her to take a shellacking, but more so behind the scenes than up front. The next budget, 2025, will be a very, very different story, though.
And tell us that what other elections are coming up this November in New York?
Well, we have the Assembly, the State Senate, the State Assembly, the hope that the Democrats can reduce or take back some of the seats they lost to the Republicans in the Congress in 2022, which I think is kind of false in some ways. What else? We probably have a bunch of local elections around the state that are not of significance. And we have the presidential election. That's important. New York State's electoral vote numbers are very, very large. The last time a Republican won in New York State was in 1980, the presidential campaign. So it's not likely that Joe Biden loses the state, but it is likely that his numbers might go down somewhat. Why? Migrants. Migrants and crime.
Well, a lot of New Yorkers are very, very angry at the migrants. And it's not their fault, but when the White House gives them permission to come in, it becomes a problem. At one point, we talked about that a lot of people are moving out of New York. At what point does it become a problem for the state or city budget?
It is a problem for the state and city budget now, John. The fact that we've lost taxpayers. We're not losing overall people who can't pay taxes. We're losing people who can pay taxes, don't want to pay taxes, or entering into the middle class and believe they can get a better deal someplace else at lower cost. Not unreasonable. It's a problem now. It was a problem last year. It's going to continue to be a problem. We lost, 80,000 people last year. We're going to lose more this year. Why? It is impossibly expensive to live here. The job market is changing. There are more opportunities for people for example, to go to Texas, where you live in the Dallas suburbs, where new cities are being created, where in Houston, where economic expansion is going on because the governments are much less likely to increase taxes of any kind or to put fees on people that some would feel unnecessary. And it's kind of, there's less rules. How's that?
And it's understood. Anything else you want to get off your chest Sunday morning?
Yeah, I always have things I want to get off my chest. Look, as New York goes, so goes the nation. Crime issues that occur here are national stories because they occur in New York. The migrant story becomes more significant because it's occurring in New York. If the president cannot figure out a way to make it easier, in the eyes at least, that the migrants are somehow going to be under control, the suburban areas of New York City will remain in Republican control. That will be his legacy, at least locally, and that's not a legacy any president would want.
Hank Shankoff, political campaign manager, strategist, everything in politics. Thank you for your wisdom. Thank you for bringing New Yorkers up to date and Americans up to date. Thank you so much.
Thank you, John. Have a great day.
The Katz Roundtable.
With us this morning is Steve Cates, otherwise known as Dr. Sky, and he brightens up our Sunday mornings by giving us all kinds of adventurous things that are going on in the skies. Well, Steve, tell us what's going on.
Well, good morning, John. Good to be with you on Sunday morning, as always. We begin with weather. Here's something strange. It's called a polar vortex, and it's spinning backwards. But what is it? John, a polar vortex is a low-pressure area in the upper atmosphere in both poles, causing cold air to circulate around the poles. But it normally flows in a counterclockwise rotation. But here's the news scoop. But as of March 4th, John, it's been turning the other direction. And meteorologists and scientists think it's caused in part by what we call planetary waves, gravity waves, like ripples in the atmosphere, like currents in the atmosphere. But the change in direction, John, of the polar vortex may not be due to many of the things that we think are just meteorological. And here we go. It's possibly due to an increase in ozone in the poles. We've heard that. But it even gets more interesting. It may be due to solar activity on the increase. How about this? Tsunamis on the Earth and earthquakes that actually force these gravity waves around the world. What does that big anomaly mean? It means that in this particular case, the weather is getting stranger, and it may not just be about climate change. John, what do you think?
Well, I don't know anymore. And the Earth, like we always said, the creator, whoever created this world, has created it to adjust itself. So anytime there's a problem, the Earth either has hurricanes, earthquakes, tornadoes, because what that the purpose of that is, it's to adjust anything it needs adjusting. What do you think? Anything else?
Well, John, it's interesting. It's like the Earth naturally, and I agree with you, has a healing process that we're still trying to figure out. But quickly, as time permits, we'll go to SpaceX. But you know, folks, that SpaceX has launched 26 rockets so far in 2024, and that's just some 84 days. They've launched 25 Falcon 9s, one big Starship. And the last Starship 3, John, got the Starship spacecraft into an orbital position. And, of course, they're still experimental. But the next one, get a look at this, Starship 4, is set for launch probably as early as May, known as IFT-4. But, John, here's something fascinating. Every week we talk about the mystery of where did the moons of Mars come from? Now, a new theory is kind of interesting, and here it is. Those two objects, Deimos and Phobos, some think are artificial moons. Some think they're captured little asteroids. But recent indications say that a long time ago, Mars was hit by another large planetary object, and it blew material out, thus forming these moons. Now, why do they think that? Because some of the surface material of Phobos, the larger of the two moons, John, has a basaltic, meaning rock-like condition, very synonymous to what the surface of Mars is like from the rovers, what we know. But we'll have to wait till 2025 when we find out when the Japanese send this interesting mission to these Mars moons, Japan's Mars Moon Exploration Mission. Now that is quite fascinating. And isn't that amazing, John? The moons of Mars have always been intriguing, and they still are today.
I think there's more to than meets the eye. Many a time, we have never been successful on landing a craft on any one of those two moons. Is that true?
That is correct, John. It's a strange thing because the gravity there, if you and I were standing on one of those moons, you almost could jump off the surface and go out into orbit. So they're small. They're obviously in motion close to the planet Mars, but we'll have to see.
And the big mystery, are the Martians that escaped Mars living in those moons? Someday we will find out. But that's what Sunday mornings are for, is to dream and to think about things like that.
Right, John, and we wanted to just mention real quick, the solar eclipse only 15 days away, but here's some quick tips if you have a smartphone, whether it's a partial eclipse or total. Get a tripod, put your camera on there and phone, and get a solar filter for it. Lock the focus at totality so that it doesn't wander, and for those more technical, use what's called the burst mode. That means you press the button on your camera, and it shoots many pictures in a few seconds. Shoot in what's called the raw mode so you can edit those pictures better. And simply, no handheld videos of the eclipse. Learn more, as always, at the Dr. Sky Experience. We have some great eclipse updates at WABCRadio.com. John, it's always a privilege and honor to be on the Cats Roundtable with the listeners here and around the nation.
Well, Steve Cates, Dr. Sky, thank you for updating us this Sunday morning and making our Sunday morning a little bit brighter. Well, with the eclipse, maybe a little bit darker.
You know, John, we'll be talking about that next week. Thank you.
The Cats Roundtable.
If you ever miss a segment or want to hear it again, go to WABCRadio.com, go to podcasts, go to minicasts, and play back your favorite segment. Thank you for being with us for the Cats Roundtable Local Edition, the number one show on Sunday mornings in New York. Keep listening to us for the Cats Roundtable National Edition between 9 o'clock and 10 o'clock. So we'll be back to you in a few minutes after the news.